Today's shir is Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Yotes. We will begin on Daf Kuf Yotes, Amar Aleph, three lines from the top. Amar, we learned in the previous shir, Vabonim, that the children of the Meraglim and the Mesloinim, who we learned in our previous shir, did not get a shir in Eretz Yisrael. So, how did their children get any portion of Eretz Yisrael? Whatever they got, what the Braisa said, they got not b'schus avi aviyem, b'schus avi mesayim. They yashined from their grandparents. Asked the Gemara, Vatanya, didn't we learn a different Braisa, the b'schus atzman, that what they got was in their own schus? So we need to reconcile these two Braises. One Braisa suggests they got it in the schus of their grandparents. Another braisa suggests they got in their own schus. Answers the Gemara Loikasha. The way we reconcile the two braisas is as follows. According to the man d'omer that says that they, Eretz Yisrael was divided up to those that left Mitzrayim. So the fact that these children entered Eretz Yisrael is irrelevant. So whatever they got was because of parents who were Yoytzim Mitzrayim. But their parents, who were the Meraglim, even if Eretz Yisrael was divided to Yoytzei Mitzrayim, we weren't going to get a portion. So what portion did they get if they got a portion? It must be because of Yoytzei Mitzrayim. Hard man the Omer, the other man the Omer, that says they got B'schus Atzmam, follows the opinion that Eretz Yisrael was divided up to the Baya Ha'aretz. And Baya Ha'aretz, they indeed were. However, as to Rishonim, the obvious question. We've been learning for a number of days already, Baruch Hashem, the Machloikus of Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonason, if Eretz Yisrael was divided, Labaye Yoretz, or Yoytzi Mitzrayim. Machloikus of Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonason. Even if we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yonason, that Eretz Yisrael was divided, Labaye Yoretz, it doesn't mean, as we have been learning, that we take all of the people who were men over 20 years old that enter Eretz Yisrael and divide up Eretz Yisrael amongst them and give them each a portion of Eretz Yisrael. Rather, we learned that even Rabbi Yonason agrees that after it was divided, Labaya Ha'aretz, it reverts back to the people who were the Yoytzei Mitzrayim, and that's when it comes back to the people who entered Eretz Yisrael. Again, the example we gave when we learned the sugya originally was if we have two people who are Reuven and Shimon, brothers, who were from the Yoytzei Mitzrayim, and now Reuven has 10 sons who entered Eretz Yisrael. Shimon has one son that entered Eretz Yisrael. So these 11 people get 11 shears, but they don't keep the 11 shears. This was the Rashbam's shot. It reverts back to their parents, Reuven and Shimon, who divided up 5.5. And Shimon's son actually ends up with 5.5 portions, and Reuven's 10 sons end up with 5.5 portions. So we're back to where we started to ask the Rashbam. Who are the portions of these individuals who are Baye Aretz going to revert back to? Their parents. But who were their parents? Their parents were the Meraglim. And we've been learning, that's the whole point of this Gemara we're learning now, that the Meraglim weren't entitled to anything in Eretz Yisrael. So what are we accomplishing? So says the Rashbam, that Rabbi Yonason is going to have to explain that even though his opinion of Baye Aretz requires Chazorah, that it revert back to the Yoytzei Mitzrayim, in the case of the children of the Meraglim, they were an exception to the rule. And what happened was, they got a portion, but unlike everybody else who entered Eretz Yisrael, according to Rabbi Yonason, whose portion reverted back to his parents, their portions did not revert back. It remained where it was. It remained by the Baye Aretz. That's one way of explaining these two braises. Rashi's pshat actually it's less of a problem because it reverts to the grandparents. And to the grandparents might not have been the Meraglim. So according to Rashi, it's less of a kasha. V'bayi seima, another way of reconciling the two braises, hava hala Baye Aretz. Both Braises represent that Eretz Yisrael is divided to the Baye Aretz. V'loi kasha. Hada hava ben esrim. Hada loi hava ben esrim. The Braise that says that they got B'schus Atzmam, referring to somebody who was a Yoytze Mitzrayim, who was a Bayei Aretz, and he was already 20 years old. The other Brayse is referring to a situation when he wasn't 20 years old. And again, the way the Rashbam explains this Teretz, he says that this Teretz is following the third opinion we learned. Because if you'll recall, when we learned the Sugya of how Eretz Yisrael was divided, we actually found three opinions. Rabbi Yishir's opinion was L'Yoytze Mitzrayim. Rabbi Yonasan's opinion, as we just said, was L'Bayei Aretz. But then we had a third opinion. It was the opinion of Rav Shim ben Elazar. Rav Shim ben Elazar says that it was to both Yoytze Mitzrayim and Bayei Aretz. And says the Gemara, that's exactly what the Braises mean. The Braises that's referring to the Yoytze Mitzrayim, the S'chus, the grandparents, means that we're following the Rav Shim ben Elazar's, we're following that aspect of Rav Shim ben Elazar's opinion that was given to Yoytze Mitzrayim. The Braise that says that we're referring to people who were Bayei Aretz refers to the aspect of Rav Shimon ben Elazar's opinion that says the Bayei Aretz received the Shir in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore these two Braises could coexist because they represent both components of Rav Shimon ben Elazar's opinion. That's how the Rashbam explains this Teretz. However, as we continue analyzing this Teretz, it's a difficult Teretz to understand. Because let's think about it. When did the incident of the Meraglim occur? It occurred in the second year after they left Mitzrayim. And we know that all the Meraglim died right after that story, besides Yeshua and Kalev, obviously. From when they died to when Klal Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael was 38 years. So the question is, how could the Gemara suggest that if they were 20 years old, they got a shear? If they weren't 20 years old, they didn't get a shear. How is it possible that the Meraglim should have children that entered Eretz Yisrael that weren't 20 years old? They died 38 years ago. So the Mefarshim explained, the Rishonim answered that question by saying when we say that they got a shear, not in their own schus, but only in the schus of the Yoytze Mitzrayim, it means because they weren't 20 years old, it doesn't mean children. It wasn't possible to have a child of one of the Meraglim that shouldn't be 20 years old as they enter Eretz Yisrael. But we also know, as we have been learning, that you yashin because of grandparents or because of uncles, as we've been learning, we'll actually learn it again. They could be that they weren't 20 years old because if they yashin because of their grandparents. Continues the Gemara. In explaining the different portions that the Benoit Tzlofchot were claiming and received, we said that Tzlofchot was a Bechor to his father, Chayfer, and therefore the Gemara said in the previous year, Shai Bechor, since he was Bechor, not L'Shnei Chalokim, he got two shears in Chayfer's Yerusha, one as a son and one as a Bechor. Ask the Gemara, as the Gemara actually did ask in the previous year, but my Royhu, when Benoit Tzlofchot are now coming to claim shears in Eretz Yisrael because of the Yerusha that they deserve as Tzlofchot's daughters, as Tzlofchot being a Yoyrish and a Bechor to Chayfer, it's Royhu. As we have been learning. Even though the halach is that a Bechor is entitled to a double portion, when is a Bechor entitled to a double portion? He's entitled to a double portion in anything that the father has at the moment of death. Anything that will accrue to the father's estate, we learned even in Ahava, that an account receivable paid, he doesn't get double. So certainly when Chayfer died, it was long before they entered Eretz Yisrael. So they didn't own that property. If they didn't own that property, how would they have a claim for a double portion? Answers the Gemara. Correct. When the Gemara says that they got a double portion in Chayfer's estate, it doesn't mean in the karka, in the property that they got in Eretz Yisrael. That was Roy, and Roy they don't get. It was what Chayfer had as he died. What did he have? Yizdos Olam. What does Yizdos Olam mean? It was the stakes with which his tent was put up. So the Mefarshim, beginning with the Rashbam, say, why does the Gemara use the example of Yizdais Ahalim, from anything else that he might have had? So Rashbam says, Because everybody had Yizdus Olam. Everybody had a tent. So that he certainly left over, and that his son Tzlofchad being a Bechor deserved a double portion, which now his Yarshim, his daughters are receiving. So I saw from our Baruch Ber a beautiful explanation built on what the Rashbam says. He says as follows. He says, whenever you have a situation that someone dies and he leaves a Bechor, you have a potential din Torah, because now they're coming to divide the estate. Bechor claims a double portion. His brothers, or the other Yarshim, his brothers, will claim, you're only entitled to a double portion what our father had at the moment of death, as I explained a moment ago. And they could have a debate on every single piece of property, on every part of the estate of the father. Did the father own it at death, or did it only come to him afterwards? But one thing they can't argue about, says Rabbi Baruch Ben, explaining the Gemara, the father certainly had a tent. He had to have where to live. So even though the halacha is hamotzi mechaveru olav araya, and if a bechor wants to claim that he deserves a double portion in any part of the estate, he has to successfully prove that his brother, that his father owned it at the moment of death, that just owned it, had it at the moment of death, that isn't required on Yizdus Olam, because it's obvious that he, and otherwise he's a matzah mechaveru olav araya, that a Yizdus Olam, it's obvious that he had it. So when the Gemara wants to use an example of something that the Bechor certainly is entitled to a double portion, because it's obvious and we're sure that the father had it when he died, Yizdus Olam is the best example. The Rishonim give another reason why the Gemara uses Yizdus Olam as the example of something that certainly got a double portion. Because again, what is the Gemara trying to say? The Gemara is trying to say that we're not talking about karka. We're talking about metalpun. But now the question is, how do we view Yizdus Olam, the stakes of the tent? Do we view it as metalpun? It's a nail. It's a big nail. Or do we look at it as karka, because it's mechubal karka? But the Gemara is trying to teach us, agavurcha, is that the Yizdus Olam are considered metatlin, and even though the mechubal karka, they have the status of metatlin. Ask the Gemara, how can we explain the pasuk that way? Masav Rava, Yehuda Omer, we learned in the previous Gemara, that Yehuda says, B'nai Tzalofcha not l'dalat chalokim. That the B'nai Tzalofcha got four shears in Eretz Yisrael. Shenema, because we quoted the pasuk in Yeshua, V'yiplu chevli Menashe asara. That Menashe's portion was divided in 10. And as we learned in the previous year, 6 are represented by the 6 Batei Av from Shevet Menashe who entered Eretz Yisrael, and 4 are represented from the B'nai Tzalofcha, what the B'nai Tzalofcha get. Now the word chevli means a rope. It's a rope that's used to measure property. So how can we suggest, ask the Gemara, that when we speak about B'nai Tzalofcha getting a Yerusha, it means metatlin, then the pasuk that uses the words Chevli Menashe makes no sense. Chevli is referring to real estate, not to metatlin. Therefore goes back to Gemara to say the terrace that we learned at the end of the previous year, El Amarava, the reason it's not considered Roy, because Eretz Yisrael Mugzakasi. Eretz Yisrael is considered something that's there from before. We're going to speak about it more on Amid Beis. And therefore, it's not considered Roy, it's considered Mukhsik. Yesterday I gave a number of explanations why Eretz Yisrael is considered Mukhsik, not Roy. I'm going to give another explanation that I saw in the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah says as follows. He says, what's the difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one of the differences, between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a person? A person can make a commitment. A person could say he's going to do something and then change his mind. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes. That's the hallmark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the signature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised to Klal Yisrael that we will get Eretz Yisrael, there's no question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to keep his commitment. And that's why our stake, our hold in Eretz Yisrael, is not considered roi, it's considered mukhsik. Meisvei asked the Gemara, Amar Rav Chitka. Rav Chitka made the following comment. Shimon HaShikmoni, Hayli Chaver. I had a colleague whose name was Shimon HaShakmoni, Mitalmidei Rabbi Kiva, who was from the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva. The Kachay of Shimon HaShakmoni Oimer. And Shimon HaShakmoni used to say, the Ben Yoyada makes an observation. First he's called Shimon HaShakmoni, and then he's called Rabbi Shimon HaShakmoni. What's the change? So he says, obviously what happened here was, Rav Chitka was a friend with this Rav Shimon HaShakmoni for very many years. And originally when they became friends, he didn't yet have smicha. So he was Shimon HaShakmoni. But their relationship endured so many years that at a certain point, Rav Shimon HaShakmoni got smicha and became Rav Shimon HaShakmoni. The Kachay Rav Shimon Oimer. That's what he used to say. Moshe Rabbeinu was well aware that the Bnei Tzlofchot were deserving of a Yerusha. What he wasn't certain of, if they deserved a share of Bechayro or not. So the way the Shoyle Meshev explains the Gemara, which is very much connected to the Gemara we're going to learn, is as follows. The Bnei Tzlofchot came with a very strong argument. They said, as we're going to learn, Eman of Shach, if we're Yarshim, fine. If we're not considered Yarshim, then why is our mother, Tzlofchot's wife, exempt from Yibum, if we're not considered an extension of our father? So their argument was, Meman of Shach, if we can exempt our mother from Yibum, then we ought to get Yerusha. If we're not able to exempt our mother, if we're not able to get Yerusha, then we ought to not exempt our mother from Yibum. But the Shalmeshah takes a step further. Moshe Rabbeinu was well aware of that argument. And therefore, as the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Bnei Tzlofchot are deserving to be Yarshim. His question, however, was only regarding the Bechayra. How do we look at their relationship to the Bechayra? Do we look at them as an extension of the father? And if they're an extension of the father, just like the father would have been gotten a double share as a Bechayra, they get it. Or do we say, no, they are Yarshim, but not to that degree? And there's a beautiful vart from the Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima says, if you look in the Chumash, when we look at the dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Bnei Tzlofchot, the Bnei Tzlofchot say to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lom nama yigara shmoi shem avinu. They use the word, why should our father's shame be deprived? So the question is, they should have said, Lom yigara yirusha savino, nachla savino. What does it have to do with shame? Says the Torah Tamima, beautiful pshat. As we just explained, the whole basis of the argument of the Bnei Tzlofchot was based on Yibum. Since it was based on Yibum, what is the main point of Yibum? As we always quote the pasuk by Yibum, V'lo yimacha shmoi mi Yisrael. So they wanted to connect their argument to the concept of Yibum. That's why they said, Lami garish shame of Yinu, to point out that the basis of our argument is the din of Yibum. So again, they were well aware that the Bnei Tzlofchot deserve a Yerusha. What he didn't know was, if they're deserving of a share of the Bechayr or not. And really, Moshe Rabbeinu should have written the din in the Torah, what they deserve. Ela, shezochu Bnei Tzlofchot, v'nichtav al yodam. They were zoicha that it should be written through them. And as the Mefarshim explained, the Rishonim say this already. If there wouldn't have been the incident of the Bnei Tzlofchot in the Torah, then there would be a pasuk in the Chumash telling us what the rule is under those circumstances. What happened was that we had this incident, and that's how the din of the Bnei Tzlofchot, of the din of such a circumstance emerged, as we're going to learn, to give the Bnei Tzlofchot that credit. But certainly, that din would have found its way into the Torah, because the Torah is complete. The Yedeya Moshe Rabbeinu, similarly Moshe Rabbeinu knew, as we recall the incident in the Torah, Shemekoshis b'misa, that the Mekoshis was Mechayiv Misa. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Mechalaleh Mois Yumas. Somebody who's Mechal Shabbos, we remember the story in the Torah, there was Mekoshish, who was Mechal Shabbos. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos discusses exactly what was the Aveira, how was Mechal Shabbos, was it that he was Ma'amer, that he gathered bundles, that he carried, Mechalikas Masechta Shabbos, but he certainly was Mechal Shabbos, and the pasuk says Mechalaleh Mois Yumas. What Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know was Beis Misa Hu Yomus, what Misa should be the one that he should die with. So the Torah would have been explicit in teaching us that he was Chayiv Misa and what the Misa is, Misa Skila, for some is Mechal Shabbos B'mezit. Elo, Shnes Chayiv Mekoshish, the Mekoshish was Chayiv Misa, the Nechtag V'al Yodoy, and it was written through him, Shem Lamdecha, to teach us the lesson, Shem Gavgan Schusa Dei Zakai. The B'nai Tzalavchad were the ones that because of them, we learned they were people, as the Gemara says, we're going to learn Chachmani Yishayah, Tzatkani Yishayah, they were very great people. So they were the vehicle through which we learned the halacha of Yerusha, V'chayva Ayidei Chayiv, and they were the ones that, and Mekoshish, who did the Saveira of Chil Shabbos, was the one that taught us, through him we learned, that what is the punishment for somebody being Mechal Shabbos B'mezit Chiv Skil. Mefarshim actually say that these are not actually the only situations that we find in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what the Oynish was. There's a story about the Mekalel, that Moshe Rabbeinu, somebody cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we didn't know the Oynish. Why does the Gemara pick Mekoshish to be the corresponding halacha to the Nois Salafchad? So the Mefarshim answer, some Sefer says this pshat, he says that the Mekoshish was actually Salafchad. And that's pshat what we say in the Haftarah on a fast day, in the Haftarah Dursh Hashem. Ki koyam Hashem l'sarisim ashe shomer s'shabbos. The Pasuk speaks about Shomer Shabbos, which Salafchad was not the Shomer Shabbos, although we'll speak about it in a minute. Is nesat lehem bebeisi uvechamoisai yad v'shem toy mibonim abonis. The pasuk is contrasting the daughters of Tzalafchad who had a yad v'shem. What does yad v'shem mean? That they had a Yerusha. That's the best Yerusha, that they had fine children versus the Tzalafchad who was not. In fact, if you look in the pasuk in the Chumash, when Moshe Rabbeinu ask the Kadosh Baruch Hu, after the B'nai Tzalafchad come to him with their claim, the word the Yakar of Mishpatam, Lifnei Hashem, the Nun of Mishpatam is a large Nun. What is the lesson? The Megalgal Schus Ayde Zakai. They were the individuals that had the Schus to bring this question to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now Taisus asks the question. The Mekoshish, the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what should be his Oynish. And therefore he has to ask Kadosh Baruch Hu, what is the Oynish? Ask Taisus, we have a rule, we're actually going to discuss it when we learn Masechta Sanhedrin, that Stam Misa, when we don't know, when the Torah uses the words Mois Yumas, the Misa is Chenek. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu have a question? He's Chayiv Chenek. Stam Misa is Chenek. So Taisus, one answer gives, is because since Moshe Rabbeinu knew that somebody who's Mechal Shabbos is Ka'ovir Avodah Zarah, somebody's Mechal Shabbos is equal to Avodah Zarah. And by Avodah Zarah, we know the Oynish is Skila. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, even though Stam Misa usually is Chenek, maybe here it's different because there's an Avodah Zarah, and Avodah Zarah, the Misa is Skila. And indeed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that the Misa is Skila. Although Rabbi Kiva Eger points out in understanding Tosfos, he says that would only help us understand the case of the Mekoshish. Because when is somebody who's Mechal Shabbos considered like an Oyved Avodah Zarah? Because only Mechal Shabbos Beferesia. So maybe there would be a difference, says the Rekiv Eger, between a Mechal Shabbos Beferesia, who has a din like Oyved Avodah Zarah, versus a Mechal Shabbos Betzina. But then there's another question, which the Rishonim discuss, and then we'll take it maybe a little further. The halacha we know is that if somebody does an Aveira, like Chil Shabbos, for which there is a punishment of Misa, b'mezid, he's chayiv skila. Only if there was proper hasra. he was properly warned. So how could the Mekoshish be Chayiv Misa? How did he get the proper warning if they didn't know at that time yet what the Oynish is, what type of Misa such a person gets? So Be'emis, there's Machloikis Tanoim. The Machloikis Tanoim that says as follows, if Hasra has to be specific in saying that if you do this Averi, you're going to get Misa, and you also have to tell the perpetrator exactly what Misa he's going to get, or is it adequate just to say that you chayv Misa? So if we learn that it's adequate just to say that he's chayv Misa, so we can understand the Hasra that the Mekoshish got. But if we say that the Hasra that's required is a whole different Hasra, the Hasra is that you have to say the exact specific type of Misa he's going to get, so how did the Mekoshish get the proper Hasra? They didn't even know yet what the Oynish is. Moshe Rabbeinu only found out later. So Mefarshim explained, the Tosfos introduces a whole new concept. Tosfos introduces a concept that really, the whole reason the Mekoshish did the Aveira, was for a different reason. This was after the Chet of the Meraglim, and Klal Yisrael were informed, as we learned, and we're going to discuss it more, that they would not be entering Eretz Yisrael for another 38 years. And Klal Yisrael would think that you're not obligated to do the mitzvahs only in Eretz Yisrael. And in the Midbar, they're not obligated to follow Taryag mitzvahs. To disabuse them of that wrong belief, the Mekoshish went and was Mechal Shabbos to show, to be ready to be Chayiv Misa in order that they should learn the lesson. That even in the Midbar, you have to follow the mitzvahs. And I saw a verse from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Why would they think that way? Why would you think that the Torah is not obligated in the Midbar? So he says a verse like this. He says, if you think about the life of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, the life of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar was a very interesting life. They didn't have to work because they had the man, they had the bear, they had the clothing, didn't get ruined. They had a very different life. And therefore they might have come to the wrong belief that in this type of environment, which is not the regular environment, similarly the dinim, the rules of the Torah don't apply. So to not make that mistake, the Mekoshish was ready to give up his life. So in other words, what Tosfos is saying, and we'll take it a step further, there was a Hayrash Shah. It was a specific situation that the Mekoshish wanted to show that what Shmira Shabbos is all about. And the Mashah, and the Shaios HaTshuvos Torah L'shma addresses this a little more as I'm going to speak, say that actually the Mekoshish wasn't Chayiv Misa. Because we know the halacha is that a malacha she'en etzrich legufa, if you do a malacha on Shabbos but you really don't have any constructive purpose, machlokes if it's bechlal considered a malacha. It's certainly not a malacha that you chayiv misa for. So the Mekoshish shouldn't have gotten misa. Why did he get misa? He got misa just, it was a whole specific situation to teach the lesson that you're not, that Shmir Shabbos applies everywhere, under all circumstances, even in the Midbar. And in fact, the Mefarshim point out, if you look in the Chumash, the Torah tells us that the Torah says that when the Mekoshish was killed, he was killed l'kala eda. Everybody was there. If you look in the parasha of the Mekalel, the Torah doesn't use those words. Why? They answer very good. They answer very beautifully. The lesson here is to teach all of Klal Yisrael. That was the entire intent here, that Shmiras Shabbos applies. How are we going to get that lesson taught if everybody sees that he's killed for being Mechal Shabbos? And in fact, as I said, I saw in the Shaios HaTshuvos Torah L'shma a very interesting shaila that was asked. A difficult shaila. I'm just saying the shaila, not saying La'aloch L'maisa. There was somebody who was traveling on the road, and it came Friday night, and he got stuck on the road, and he entered into an inn. And there was a room in the inn that he was able to lay down to sleep. It was freezing outside, and he found a place to rest and spend the Shabbos. After being there a short while, Goyim enter the room. And the Goyim were anti-Semites and were suspicious that this person was a Jew. And they weren't going to allow him to remain there. And this individual got now very concerned that he's going to be expelled from the room and have to spend the entire Shabbos out in the freezing cold. So he wanted to convince them that they shouldn't be concerned that he's Jewish. So he went and he lit the candle. What was his thinking? His thinking was the exact same thinking as what we just explained. He didn't light the candle because he wanted the light on. Actually, he did want the light on because he wanted to sleep in the room. So the light was only going to disturb him. He only lit the candle to convince these anti-Semites that he's not a Jew. So it's a Malach Shenetzrich Lagufa, and perhaps he wasn't considered, the Torah Lishma discusses the Mechal Shabbos. The Ben Yoyada and other Mefarshim asked the question, we just learned the Gemara about Shimon HaShekmoni and his entire limud about the Benoit Slavchad. So he asks, why does the Gemara have to say that he was from the Talmid Rebbe Akiva? So he says a beautiful teretz. He says, the Gemara says, as I referred to earlier, the Rebbe Akiva is the man to Omer that says that the Mekoshish was Salafchad. And when Rebbe Akiva makes that comment, says the Gemara, Rebbe Yehuda was upset with Rebbe Akiva. He said, Memar Shach. If he did it, HaTaira Kisasa. If the Taira concealed who he was, Vata Magala, and you go and tell us who he was, if the Taira didn't want us to know, why do you tell us? The answer Rebbe Akiva gives is the answer that we just explained. Because Mekoshish really had a good Kavona. And therefore, since he had a good kavanah, Rebbe Akiva has no problem disclosing that he had a honest, pure intent. Shimon HaShekmoni, however, considers the Mekoshish the Galgan Choy Vayidei Chayev. So he considers him not to be a good person. So that's why he says he was Talmid Rebbe Akiva. Even though he was from the Talmid Rebbe Akiva, he obviously had a very different view than his Rebbe. His Rebbe, Rebbe Akiva, considers the Mekoshish being Tzalafchad and notifying us that the Mekoshish was Tzalafchad, that he had a good intent. Obviously, Shimon HaShekmoni did not follow that approach. As we finish this Gemara, that the Gemara says, Megalgun Schus HaYidei Zakai, V'choy V'HaYidei Chayiv, so the Sefer Chassidim says a tremendous word based on this. He says, if let's say you give somebody advice, and the advice you give the person turns out to be bad advice, you have to think that maybe there's something wrong with you, that maybe you need to do tshuva, because you were the person that caused that the other person should have a problem. Megalgan choiv aydei chayiv. The Alta fin Kelim used to say, by Avinu Malkeinu, we daven kosveinu b'seif z'chuyos. He says, what's pshat that we daven kosveinu b'seif z'chuyos? We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should be in the category of individuals who are megaglan schus aydei zakai. That we should always be in the category of people who bring good to other people, never chas v'sham the other way. Says the Gemara, v'isal k'daitach et Yisrael muchzakis. Now we're going back to our Gemara. That the Gemara is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu had a question if they deserve a shear. Ask the Gemara if we're going to establish, as we've already been trying to establish, that Eretz Yisrael is considered not Roy to us. But Eretz Yisrael is actually considered Mechzokis to us. What was the question? Obviously, they deserve a share in Eretz Yisrael. Answers the Gemara, he gufa kamastapkalei. The question that the Gemara has been addressing was actually the question that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the halacha, that there's a difference between Roy and Muxik. His question was, how do we view the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael? Do we view it as a relationship of Roy? Do we view it as a relationship of Muxekas? The Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Nasati Oysel Lechem Arosh Ani Hashem. Doesn't mean Yerushahi Lechem Evesechem. Does the Pasuk mean that Eretz Yisrael is ours already from our forefathers, that our forefathers already had Eretz Yisrael? Adema Shemarishin Vani Yarshim. How do we understand what Eretz Yisrael, that it's something that we will get, but it's not considered that our forefathers already had, and since it's not considered something that our forefathers already had, we're not entitled to a double portion. And then Moshe Rabbeinu was able to answer, we say this in the share every day. The pasuk doesn't say that we will come. El tivi emoi, our children will come. Melamed, Klai Yisrael, when they came out of the Yam Suf, Misnabim said in Nevuah, but they didn't even recognize what they were saying. Benidayim, Mamisnabim. They didn't know what they were saying. What they were really saying was that Eretz Yisrael is ours, but we will never get our hands on it. It will be only our children that will have it, but it's already considered as ours, and therefore the Bechor is entitled to a double portion. So the pasuk continues in teaching us the dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Bnei Salafchat. So the question is obvious. Efsha omdu lufnei Moshe, is it possible they stood in front of Moshe Rabbeinu? V'loyam lam dover. And Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to respond to their question. V'omdu lufnei anasim v'kol ha'eda. And then they asked the question to the other individuals. How do we understand the pasuk? It's a difficult pasuk to understand. If Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Rabbim, Shekol Yisrael, wasn't able to answer them, how could anybody else answer them? It says the Gemara, Soros Mikrev Dersheyu. We have to learn the pasuk backwards. Not that they went to Moshe Rabbeinu first. But what happened was, even though Moshe Rabbeinu was mentioned first in the pasuk, what happened was they first went to the Nasiim. The Nasiim weren't able to answer, so they went to Elazar. Elazar wasn't able to answer, so they went to Moshe. So if that's what happened, the obvious question is, so why is the pasuk not mentioned in the proper sequence? So Mepharshim say, what happened was, the pasuk doesn't want to mention the Nasiim before Elazar, and doesn't want to mention Elazar before Moshe Rabbeinu. Seeing that what actually happened was, they went Nasiim, Elazar, Moshe, the pasuk mentions Moshe, Elazar, and Nasiim in the order of their importance. But I saw a fantastic medrash. The medrash says as follows, and it changes the entire Gemara. That's a medrash. The medrash says as follows. They went to the Nasiim, and the Nasiim couldn't answer. They went then to Elazar, and Elazar couldn't answer. They went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Truth is, Moshe Rabbeinu could have answered them. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the answer. But Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, if the Nasiim weren't able to answer, and Elazar wasn't able to answer, and now I'm going to be able to answer, it'll show arrogance. So instead of answering them, he says, you know what? I don't know. I need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Incredible medrash. Give Rabbi Yishu. That's what Rabbi Yishu understands the pasuk. Abba Chana Aymer, a different pshat in the pasuk. Mishumer Beloza. What happened was, the Beis Medrash HaYoshvim, they were all sitting in the Beis Medrash, V'hoch V'amdu Lam Lefnei Kulam. And they came and asked. And as Mepharshim explained, they were very smart in asking the question at the right time. They were learning the Beis Medrash Hilchos Yibum, and they explained earlier, their whole argument was based on the laws of Yibum. So when they saw that they were learning in Yeshiva, Sechti Yivamis, they were learning Hilchos Yibum, that was their time to ask the question. Ask the Gemara by Mike Kmefugi, what is the basis of the Machloikis and how to understand the Pasuk? Ma'asav Echolkin Kovel Latam V'Mokam Arav. That you could ask a question, you could show covered to a Talmud in front of the Rebbe. And therefore, even though Moshe Rabbeinu was there, you could address a question to the Nasiim and to Elazar also. Chalkin covered the Talmud Makam Arav. What is the basis for his opinion? Said the Mepharshim, the Rishonim say this, because we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Klal Yisrael covered, even though he's the Rav in comparison to us. On Ma'asava, ain't Chalkin. They were not allowed to. So if they were all sitting there, they could have never addressed. If Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting there, they could have never addressed Moshe Rabbeinu. It must be, they could have never addressed, I'm sorry, Elazar and the Nasiim. It must be that they went to each one of these categories separately. The Hilchasa, says the Gemara, the Aloch is Chalkim, that we do give disrespect. The Hilchasa ain't Chalkim. Ask the Gemara, how do we reconcile? Kasha Hilchasa, Hilchasa. Do we or don't we? Answer the Gemara, loy kasha. Hilchos achos loy kasha. Had the palagle Rebbe Yikra, in a situation where the Rebbe is giving the Talmud covered, then you're allowed to give a Talmud covered by Makom HaRebbe. Had the loy palagle Rebbe Yikra, in a situation where the Talmud is not getting respect from the Rebbe, there the halacha is that if the Rebbe isn't ready to show respect to the Talmud, then you don't have to give him respect either. But the Mefarshim, the Paiskim say that let's say it's a situation that by you giving the Talmud kavod, the Rebbe will receive kavod, because people will say to themselves as follows: this person is only the Talmud of that Rebbe, and look at the great respect he's getting. Certainly his Rebbe must be greater. There everybody agrees that you're allowed to give the Talmud kavod b'makom harav. Tana. Says the Gemara, we learned in a brisa, but not lofchet, chachmoni is high, we're very smart, our shani is haim, they were able to understand the Torah, tzidkani is high. Chachmoni is high, shlefish shah dibru. They spoke at the right time. Dara shmuel rabbi yitzchak malam, chay moshe rabbeinu yoshiv, v'dorish v'parashis yivamim. They were learning with stach the yivamis. And the pasuk says, ki yeshu achim yachtav. And amrloi. So they argued to moshe rabbeinu. Im keben anu chashuvim, if we're equal to son, to Nulan and Lach the Kaben, so then we deserve a share, we deserve our father's Yerusha. Im Lav, if you're going to say the fact that we're females disqualify us, and females, so to speak, are not considered children, to Tisrabim Aminu, so then why is our mother exempt from Yibam? Yad, V'yakav es mishpoish es mishpatul f'nei Hashem. Dashonis hayu, then they were dashonis. They say like this, Shaya Oimris, they made the following argument. Ila hayulay ben, if our father had son, loy hayulay debarnu, we would never begin making any claim. The only reason we're asking is because our father only left over daughters; he didn't leave over any sons. Ask them over Tanya Bas. There's a brisa that says that they said if our father had left over a daughter, we wouldn't have made the claim. How do we understand that brisa? Answers the Gemara: Amar Yemi son mekam bas. It doesn't make any sense. By Omar, we have a way of understanding the Braisa. Afiyah hayabas leben loy debarnu, which means as follows. We've learned as follows. That a son, in the line of succession, a son comes before a daughter. Let's say somebody had a son, but that son predeceased the father. But that son left over children, daughters. They didn't leave over any sons. The granddaughters come before the daughters. Because the granddaughters are an extension of the son. What they were saying was, if our father had a son, even if that son would have died before our father died, but he would have left over a daughter, we would have realized that our niece, our father's granddaughter, comes before us. But what happened here is our father never had sons and didn't even leave over any granddaughters. He only had us, these four daughters, and we want to share. Continues the Matzat Kanye saying, Shalai Nasa Elwa Hagelan. They only married somebody that they only took shidduch that was a proper shidduch. Taner Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, afil k'tanish behem, the youngest of the benois of Nafkad, v'nisus p'chus mebaris arba'im shana, was no younger than 40 years old. Asked the Gemara, eini v'ar Rav Chizda nisus p'chus mebaris esrim, if a woman gets married when she's younger than 20, you let this at shishim, she'll continue having children until she's 60. Bas esrim, if she gets married when she's 20 or higher, you let this at arba'im. They'll be able to have children until she's 40. Bas Aboim, if she only gets married when she's 40, shuv eni yeladis. She won't be able to have children anymore. So how could they wait to get married? So the Gemara Matoch Shetzidkani is saying, since they would say Tzidkanias, Naslan Nes Ki Yecheved. The Nes, like Yecheved, which we're going to learn tomorrow, that she had a child when she was 130 years old, happened to them. So first of all, the Paiskim will say that this Gemara isn't relevant anymore in our world. Women changed biologically, and you could have a woman that gets married at 40 and still have children. The question comes up as follows. Let's say a person, Chasam Sofer discusses this in the Tshuvas, let's say somebody gets married to a woman, gets engaged to a woman, with the assumption that she's under 40, and then afterwards it turns out that she's over 40. Does he have a right to break the engagement? Because he says he's getting married to have children, and she's over 40. And the Gemara says over 40, if you get married over 40, you can't have children. So the Chasam Sofer says, as I'm saying, that nowadays everything changed. Moreover, The Pesukim say that if a woman, even if she's over 40, always had intention to get married and have children, that psychological effect has effect on the biological, and she'll still be able to have children. It was different then, but they were great people. They were tzedekis, and they were confident that they would have children, and it was worth waiting for the right shidduch.